If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the official Formula One podcast, which answers your questions about the sport. And some of those questions can only be answered by Formula One drivers. Good news, we can help with that. And this week...
And what a drive from Alexander Albon, who gets his best finish of the season.
It is Alex Albon, who writes from racing karts as a kid, has looked promising. He was often the one to beat at the grassroots level of motorsport, and a host of championship wins led him to Formula Renault, Formula 3 and Formula 2. In 2018, a third place finish in the championship saw him promoted to Formula 1 after three wins across the season.
Alexander Albon can see the checkered flag. Alexander Albon wins in Baku. He has survived everything he needed to. Alexander Albon wins at Silverstone. He was gifted the lead, but my word, did he accept it. Wonderful drive afterwards. That was as professional as it gets from Alexander Albon.
Well done, Alex. Well done. Very good job today. Well done to you and your mechanics.
And F1 started well. He was promoted after just 12 races at the team we now know as Racing Bulls to the main Red Bull team. He stayed in that seat until the end of 2020, where there were some testing times, often involving Lewis Hamilton.
Alex Albon has Hamilton troubles here as he turns in. Oh, and Lewis Hamilton makes contact with Alex Albon. His first podium in Formula One is sent spinning and drifting away in the infield at Interlagos. Albon is all over the back of Hamilton, who once again forces it the long way round.
And
Albon again, no, with Lewis Hamilton. He's lost out once more as it was in Brazil. He comes off second best. The cars touch, and the podium that looked a certainty has been wiped out in a matter of seconds.
And despite some good times...
Finally! It's third time lucky for Alex Albon after seeing two podiums snatched away from him through crashes with this man, Lewis Hamilton. He is in the top three in Formula One.
Red Bull decided to go with Sergio Perez for 2021, leaving Alex as reserve driver for the season. But he'd be back.
Alex Albon taking the final points of the day. Well done, Williams. Very good strategy.
Since 2022, Alex has been leading a revival at Williams. And that first point for the team in Australia has been the first of many. Under team principal James Vowles, Williams has been transformed and they're currently enjoying their best season in F1 since 2016. Alex has been at the heart of their revival, reigniting his career and cementing his position as one of the sport's most talented drivers. So, let's ask him some of your questions. Welcome to F1 Explained. Ask Albon. Alex Albon, welcome to F1 Explains. The last time you were on this podcast, you...
I was on this before.
You've been on this before, yes.
Wow, I did not know.
You interrupted your boss by using his loo.
Okay, yes.
Yes.
Understood now.
Jeremiah asks, Williams have recently signed a title sponsor for 2025. You're now at Lassie and Williams Racing. And Jeremiah's question is, how does funding from sponsors work? How much of a team's costs are covered by sponsors? Obviously, we're not expecting exact figures, but you know what I mean.
I think that was Alex, probably. There you go.
It's Alex Albon, hello, welcome to F1 Explains.
You might as well come in, Alex.
I use James's office for his toilet before sessions, so here I am.
About 5 minutes before you, Carlos Sainz tried to do the same.
Did he? Did he not commit?
And to be really clear, well, you don't use my office, you use the toilet in my office.
I use the toilet in the office. Yeah. That's
really important to get that clear on camera.
I'll see you in about 10 minutes.
And you went viral for that.
Did we?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Very much so.
No problem.
What viral content can you offer us this time round?
I don't know. I have my own toilet.
Oh, well done.
In European races, we have our own driver room and our own toilet next to it. So I will not disturb you here.
Yeah, you can disturb us anytime you like. You're always welcome.
I'm good. Okay. I've done my
disturbing.
I've done my number twos already.
Good. Important to clarify that before we carry on. Yes, good. On that bombshell, we will carry on. This is Ask an F1 Driver. You are an F1 driver. Would you like to answer some listeners' questions?
No.
Very good. Thank you. Join us next time. Unfortunately, you've been put in front of us to do so. So while we're here, we might as well. This one is from Karina in Sydney. And she says, as we head towards the end of the season, we have several night races. Singapore, Las Vegas, Qatar, Abu Dhabi. How different is driving at night time from racing in the day? Do you notice changes like visibility, lighting, body clock adjustments?
Yes.
Does it change the experience much compared to a daytime race?
I would say the biggest shift is our body clock. So our jet lag planning, you could imagine it's just strange. We go to bed at normally around maybe 3, 4 a.m. or depends on the circuit, but we then sleep through the day. So we focus on hotels with good night blinds, you know, blackout blinds, and then we think about nutrition and shifting everything open, delayed, so you know, restaurants and everything like that, they're not open, so we have to kind of get the hotels or the team to make us food at certain times. That's the bigger challenge than anything, and also
so logistics. Yeah,
yes, and the preparation before a weekend. So we're kind of just, I guess it's like other jobs when they do night shift, we're kind of just owls in the middle of the night.
You become night workers.
Exactly. In terms of visibility and everything, the main thing is you feel a little bit more the speed. There's a bit more of this motion blur effect going on, especially in a track like Vegas when you've got the neon lights around everywhere.
So many lights.
The tracks are so well lit now, though, that we kind of use the same visors we do daytime to nighttime. There's a huge amount of focus on lights, and I've got quite light sensitive eyes.
I do too. I've always got sunglasses on.
Really?
Yeah.
So I don't know where that was going with that, but but I have to run quite tinted visors even in the nighttime.
Excellent. Yeah. I'm going to ask you a question that's based on our next listener question, but I'm just curious to ask it. Do you consider yourself a celebrity?
Celebrity? No.
Said this, yes, no.
I feel like at a race weekend, I don't want to be known as a celebrity.
No, sure.
But I get noticed enough
that
I would put myself in the category of getting more noticed than a regular person.
Yes, yeah, sure. And on that note, Grace from Virginia says, I'm very curious how the level of celebrity impacts the driver's daily lives. So can Alex go out to dinner? Are they more likely to get a takeout for that reason? What about daily errands like groceries or dry cleaners? How does their level... You don't go into a dry cleaners. How does their level of fame impact dating or making friendships? Now, we obviously know that you're not dating at the moment.
No,
but sure.
I mean, I have a girlfriend.
Exactly.
In that way, it's easier. I mean, you got a bit of street cred to your name, let's say.
What, because you got a girlfriend?
No, because I'm a racing driver. Right.
I thought you meant, sorry, I misunderstood, sorry.
And then in terms of day-to-day life, I would say if you don't know me already, I am introverted in nature. So I do struggle a little bit, especially when we go to city races. Mm. I tend to just stay in my hotel room and order in. I love food, which is kind of a bit of a challenge. So I like to kind of explore and eat out and go to these maybe famous local restaurants, whatever. But I will try to order in as much as I can. And then more than anything, being truthful, it's more around, it's not so much me. I don't struggle with it as much. I think I've had to get used to it. Mm. It's more the people that I'm around, like my family or my girlfriend or people that, you know, it's different when you get noticed and you're walking around and you're just trying to be socialized within the normal setting, let's say, and you walk around London or even here we're in Italy in Milan, where there's a huge love for Formula One. You kind of have to pick your moments a little bit and you know, dress down for the most part, wear a hat or a hoodie, but that's it. I'm not against it. It's just I like my private time. And
yeah, sure.
I guess I can deal with it to a point. And I do find myself kind of, I get overwhelmed if it's too much. So I kind of have to back off a little bit and then split my time.
And most listening to this will know this, but to anyone who's super new to F1, you're British Thai. You race under a Thai flag.
Yes.
How is it going to Thailand, where, let's be honest, there's not as many Formula One drivers than, say, Britain has had in the past, you know? So your level of fame there must be quite something.
It's interesting, because when I first became a Formula One driver and I first went to Thailand, it was very low still. I would say the average Formula One viewer in Thailand is much lower than there is in Europe or America. So then you could imagine, yes, I am maybe the only Formula One driver, but the amount of people that know me are less.
Sure.
But I would say the people that do recognize me are more intense, because it's possibly a bigger thing in Thailand. And but what I've seen is it's been growing massively. Every year I go there, it's been better and better. And I say better because I feel like it feels important for me to be able to... We always try to do things with the fans, meet and greets and whatnot. And we've realized that there's just more... We go to bigger and bigger. Back in Thailand, you kind of do shopping centers. That's like... That's what the K-pop singers do. And
it very much is, isn't it? You see these massive queues outside shopping centres.
Yes,
I've never asked this question to a Formula One driver before. Have you ever dominated a shopping centre?
I have dominated. Yes, I have. Yeah, it's a bit weird.
Excellent. How was that for you?
Yes. I hold out a massive shopping centre, security everywhere, and there's like three people in line.
Oh, really?
No.
I so wish that happened, actually, that they'd expected this massive thing.
Humble yourself.
Oh, right. Okay. Fine. Yeah, fine. Excellent.
It's interesting. It's more intense. And Netflix and the F1 movie, I've realised, has also created a bigger turn up as well. So more Thai people engaging in Formula One with the movie coming out.
Well, that's great. Excellent. Yeah. Excellent.
And there's a big talk about a race coming to Thailand.
I'm
pushing for, obviously.
Yeah, it'd be a shock if you weren't.
Yeah, not biased at all.
No.
but that will really, I hope, you know, we can do like a roadshow or something next year. That's what we're pushing for, just to start the buzz, and that would be very cool.
A classic F1 driver question, this from Tim in South Carolina. Tim says, I was wondering how the drivers get their numbers for their car. Do they choose their own number? What happens if two drivers want the same number?
Yes.
And why does Alex choose his if that's a choice?
Good question. Generally speaking, the same reason why do you have a passcode on your phone, or what is it? And it's likely going to be your birth date, or it's going to be something with a small relevance to you. Mine is that. Mine is 23. I'm born on March the 23rd. And I had this theory that odd numbers were lucky for me. So I was like, odd number, 23rd of March. And my hero growing up was Valentino Rossi, who was 46. I didn't want to be 46 because everyone knows 46 is Valentino Rossi's number. So,
sure.
But you know what 23 is? 23 is half of 46.
Maths fans, it is, yes.
It was meant to be 46. Sorry, it was meant to be 23.
Yes.
And drivers do compete. So it's whoever gets there first.
And now it's sort of a driver's brand, isn't it? It's important to say, when I was growing up watching F1, it was all in order. So when Michael Schumacher was winning, he was always number one. Yeah, his teammate Rubens Barrichello was number two, blah, blah, blah. Yes, but now you guys get to choose, which is lovely. Yep. Final one for you, Alex. I would love to know the process behind drivers' special helmet designs, since they're always so creative with them. We picked this one for you because I've said this to you before, you do some cracking helmets.
Thank you.
Talk us through a couple of your highlights. So, let's have a look at your best bits.
Yeah, okay. Panda helmet, panda face.
Brilliant.
I say orange in Miami, just having an orange on my face. Golf ball. I had a golf ball in Miami as well. I had some tame ones too. I had just some nice designs. Like I had my Japan one this year was like a pixel art Pokemon style.
Oh, that's cool.
Japan. And then I've got some coming, but I'm working with some artists in the local areas of them circuits and doing some stuff with them as well. So
that's lovely.
It is fun. I'm sure I'm missing some. I had a couple of good ones planned in the future, in races previously, but yeah.
Somebody's written me some notes, either producer Jamie or producer Chris, typically, and it says there was one featuring your family pets, eight cats, one dog, and one horse. I don't remember that.
Every race in Silverstone, I try to do an homage to my to my pets. So there's always some version of my pets on my helmet. So there's a bit of that going on. What I will say is not all the teams give the permission like Williams do to allow their drivers to go as rogue as I do. So you can imagine there's a lot of commercial rights, a kind of uptight, suit-up brand.
Yeah, sure.
Is not going to allow their driver to have a panda as their face on their helmet.
I know, but Lassie and Duracell, they love it.
Everyone's, yeah. Everyone's, Williams, we're chill out here. So
yeah.
I haven't had a helmet design refused, which is, I remember, for example, at Red Bull, there's obviously quite restrictive in what you can do. So
sure, it's got to be a fizzy drink.
It is. Yeah. It is. So here I am, and this is what I do.
And that is the main advantage driving for Williams, of course.
The helmets.
The helmets, yeah. So I imagine why you signed here.
It was the only reason.
It was it. Yeah. And that, he's joking. Somebody will clip that up. He's joking. Alex, as ever, talking to you, this has been insightful. Thank you for coming off.
In part. I'm not sure how insightful that was.
Oh, no. You're always one of my favourites to talk to. Alex Albon, thank you for answering our listeners' questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Christian.
Lovely, 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 lovely. A huge thank you to Williams. A huge thank you to Alex Albon. And we couldn't not get him on, could we, after the chaos he caused in our Ask a Team Principal episode. We just had to get him on. By the way, we mentioned the journey Williams have been on a lot at the start of the podcast. That Ask a Team Principal episode we did with James Vowles. We really dig into the Williams revival quite a lot. There was lots of questions that led him to talk about that. So that's worth going back on this feed and listening to, not just to hear Alex come in and cause chaos as he often does, but also to hear a bit more about James's Williams revival. And listen, I was delighted to see them get that podium last weekend in Baku. You could see it coming from Williams. You could see them building into a podium. And everybody thought it would be Alex who got that podium, right? Because he's had so many brilliant results that we said, as we said at the start of the episode, just shows you how unpredictable Formula One can be. Alex can have a rare off weekend. Carlos can swoop in and get the podium. And isn't that the strength that Williams find themselves in, where they've got this other brilliant driver now who can come in and pick up podiums when Alex isn't in the points for the weekend? But trust me, Alex will be back. We've not seen the last of the impressive Alex Albon performances in 2025 and beyond. I'm excited for Williams, especially going into the new rule set in 2026. I think Alex is a great Formula One driver. I think he really is someone that you will see win races, you will see get podiums in Formula One. I think he's a really exciting talent, and I don't see any reason why he can't achieve that with Williams. Lovely stuff. Enjoyed having him on the podcast. And let's just say hello to a few of you, actually. Saz says, love, love, love Bernie Collins. More of this, please. I agree with you, Saz, completely. That was last week. We did one of our quickfire specials with Bernie. Bernie has long been a favourite of this podcast. So if you missed that last week, we just put all the sorts of bits and bobs questions we get in to a Formula One expert, in this case, former Aston Martin strategist Bernie Collins, who's extremely popular. Some viewers around the world and in the UK see her on Sky Sports. She's brilliant. So that was last week. Sigma Kid says, this podcast is fire. Please keep making more. Well, Sigma Kid, I love Sigma. Brilliant artist, if you've not heard of Sigma. I'm giving music recommendations now, apparently. Fine. But yes, we'd love to keep making more. I hope we can. Thank you, Sigma Kid. I hope you enjoy our podcast and the music of Sigma. Urban Bike on Spotify. Urban Bike, as is his username, comments on a lot of our episodes, and we really appreciate it. Urban Bike said, the passion that the Tifosi have for Ferrari is simply insane. Ah, yes, this was our episode we did in Italy, where we explained the special relationship Ferrari have with the sport and their fans have with Ferrari. Mr. Urban Bike goes on to say, it's on a completely different level to any other team. Great podcast episode. Thank you to you, Urban Bike, as ever. Anios says she loved our episode where we looked at how teams scout junior drivers with Mercedes. That was interesting. We spoke to Gwen LeGru, who's in charge of picking up talent. That was brilliant. And also Dorian Pan from F1 Academy, who's a current Mercedes young driver. Really, really enjoyed that. Also, hello to Johnson, Sarah, Beatrice, Anna, and another Spotify username here. These do test me. Suerfels, I hope I've got that right. It's a Spotify username. I'm sure you're not too fussed if I haven't. Who all sent lovely messages to say how much they enjoyed Esteban Ocon on our previous Ask a Formula One Driver episode, the one we did before Alex Albon. So thank you very much to you guys. We should say, any questions you've got about Formula One, send them to f1explains@f1.com. That is the place to send your questions. We will answer them. We will put your questions to the best people in the Formula One paddock, and we will be doing that right until the end of the season in Abu Dhabi. We'll be doing more of that next week. We have new episodes every Friday. Please don't forget to hit like or subscribe or follow and leave us a nice comment. It massively helps us. We want to be able to keep making F1 Explains long into next season, so your likes, comments and shares really help us in our mission to do that. Until next Friday, here on F1 Explained, I'm Christian Hugill, back next week. Bye for now.